This is KDLG's Bristol Bay and Beyond for Friday, January 16th. I'm your host, Dave Benninger. Thanks for joining us. Coming up in the next half hour, Bryce Edgman joins us for a little preview ahead of the legislative session starting next week in Juneau. Two of our favorite doctors drop by to coach me and you into a healthier 2015. We'll check in on the K-300 trail with our friends to the north, and of course, more on Dillingham's efforts to annex the Nooshigak Commercial Fishing District. First, a look back at some of the week's news you may have missed. Northern Dynasty Minerals, the sole owner of the Pebble Project, announced this week it had raised $13 million through the sale of private investor shares to fund its operations in 2015. Vice President of Public Affairs Sean McGee spoke to the company's 2015 priorities earlier this week.
Our main focuses are two, to bring in a new major funding partner for the Pebble Partnership to move the project forward into permitting, and secondly, to address the issues arising from the EPA, their Bristol Bay Watershed Assessment, and 404C regulatory process.
Northern Dynasty is not expecting any major work at the Pebble site this summer. Area 17B and C hunters finished the winter moose season stronger than expected, considering the poor winter travel conditions. Neil Barton is the area wildlife biologist at Fish and Game's Dillingham office.
We ended up at 27, actually, and the difference maker really was Kaliganik and New Stew started getting a few moose, and I think they got about 10 between the two villages.
The Area 17A moose hunt north of Togiak has reported two cows and one bull harvested so far. On our crime and safety beat, state troopers flew to Togiak Sunday morning after a young man allegedly threatened to shoot a village police officer who was trying to arrest him on an assault charge. Anthony Forbes, age 19, who troopers say was intoxicated, was located, arrested, and charged with seven crimes, including four assault charges, two weapons charges, and resisting arrest. In Dillingham Monday, 57-year-old Robert Nielsen allegedly hit his son-in-law with a ball-peen hammer and broke the man's arm. Nielsen was arrested and charged with first-degree assault. Police say a family dispute had gotten out of hand. A Queethluck man who went missing last week has been found. The body of 67-year-old Andrew was located yesterday near the village's airport. Troopers say the elderly Andrew walked off on foot last Friday morning. You can find more on those stories at our website, kdlg.org. Last night, the Dillingham City Council voted to send the annexation petition forward to the Local Boundary Commission. We discussed the matter last week on this program with one of the leading opponents. Earlier today, I spoke with Dillingham Mayor Alice Ruby, who has supported annexation and has been guiding it through city politics all year. I asked for her thoughts on last night's vote.
I guess I would just say I'm really pleased the council made a decision and that we're moving forward. And, this is still going to be a long process. But we're happy that we're taking that leap and, going to start into the Local Boundary Commission process. And we're still looking forward to working with our neighbors on the borough feasibility and just kind of watching as our neighbors sort of go through their own process of deciding whether they're going to annex or not. Everyone's sort of working on their futures of their cities right now, so we're, happy to be moving ahead.
Let me ask you specifically about that timeline. This isn't going to happen right away. It needs to go to the Local Boundary Commission, and it may be up to a year to review it, but maybe you can fill in what the city feels that they're looking at this point.
It's our expectation that it could take, up to 9 months or even a year before this actually gets before the legislature. The LBC has a standard process they have to go through where they, once submitted, they have to review petition, note any deficiencies, they send it back to you, you repair those deficiencies, submit it, and so on. Before they even consider it accepted, then they go through a series of public comments, and then they issue draft decisions, and those can be appealed, and there's time periods for each one, of course, and
do you think that this will make it to the legislature by 2016, or do you feel more confident it might be the next year?
It could make it to the legislature by 2016 if everything went, exactly as with no appeals and no delays. It could make it to the 2016 legislative session, but our original plan was that we would adopt it much sooner than this. We brought it actually before the council earlier in 2014, and that gave us enough of a buffer. We were confident on the 2016 session I guess right now we're going to work under a schedule of it being there for the 2016 legislative session, but I'll just say we won't be surprised if it doesn't quite make it.
Well, I'd certainly invite you back to talk more about it in the future, but specifically to passing it last night with the council. This idea of annexation has been opposed by a number of folks, several of whom showed up last night to again speak of their opposition to it. Also opposed by several of the regional organizations, the ones we call the BBs, the Hospital Corporation, BBDC, and so on. Why are you confident? Why is the city confident this is the right move to make at this time?
Because we've been looking at it for so long. You know, it's taken us 4 years to get to the point where we are now. And also because we take seriously the fact that there is going to be less help from Juneau than we've had in the past, and we certainly haven't had enough. And again, we've been looking at this for 4 years, this specific petition for 4 years. Prior to that, we looked at borough feasibility. We looked at annexing in the other direction, annexing north. We've looked at all the options that we have, and this one is the one that makes sense for us and that brings in revenues that we really desperately need to keep the city, you know, on a even keel.
Alice, do you expect to see more opposition to this as this process unfolds with the LBC and eventually down in Juneau?
Yes, certainly we do. I think I'm comfortable that we're, especially with our closest neighbor, with Manicotic, you know, that we're aware that we're all just trying to serve our communities best. We all have our positions, and that certainly they will still oppose the annexation petition. But we also all recognize that, you know, we have to move forward. We've got to represent our communities, and we've got to move forward.
Mayor Alice Ruby, thank you for the update.
Okay, thanks, Dave. See you later.
This is Bristol Bay and Beyond on KDLG. Well, the weather is poor here, but to our north, a hardy breed of mushers is gearing up for the annual K300 race out of Bethel. The team at KYUK will be reporting from the trail this weekend. Ben Matheson joins us now for a quick preview. Ben, thanks for being here again.
Thank you, Dave. Happy K300.
So where are you heading to follow the action this week, this weekend?
I'll be based in Tulip Sack, which is about 50 miles up the trail, and we have reporters in Kalskeg and nobody in Antioch. That's the turnaround point.
Well, so what we've heard so far this week, it sounds like the trail is ready. It's a little bit unusual. Tell us more.
I don't think there is really a typical Kuskokwim, Dave, but this year the trail is hard, icy, and depending on what kind of weather we get, maybe a bit slick with some rain, some freezing rain.
It's mostly going to follow the river, it sounds like.
It's following the river exclusively, actually. There's usually a big loop around Antioch where it goes off in the tundra, but due to low snow and just the strange winter we've had, it's actually following just the Kuskokwim River, actually on the truck trail where we have trucks driving back and forth.
Well, the veterans you spoke with, they sound pretty pumped. They don't sound too dismayed about the trail or the conditions. Is that the sense you're getting?
A lot of guys have been here when it's been dubbed the Kuskokwim Swim, where there's a foot, several inches of water, glare ice. So I think this is one of the years that guys have been around the block have definitely seen worse. And generally across the state, it's been a low snow year. And speaking with the Boozers, they've been training in Big Lake, where there's been snow, but still hard-packed trails. All of the Western Alaska teams have typically been training on ice. So this is kind of what the state of mushing is here in early 2015.
Well, how many mushers do you have signed up, and when do they get underway today?
We have 25 mushers in the K300. It starts 6:30 tonight on the ice in front of Bethel.
Ben, who's the odds-on favorite, or if you were a gambling man, where would you place your bet today?
A lot of people are looking at Rowan Boozer, 25-year-old son of Martin Boozer, who won last year. He's a two-time champion at age 25. However, no one's ever going to count out Jeff King, who's won this race 9 times. He was within a few minutes of winning it last year for his 10th, and he has always been in the mix in the K300. And, of course, we're looking at one of our local guys. There's 6 YK Delta mushers participating in this year's race, but I believe we have 8 of the top 10 mushers from last year. We have 5 past champions. We've got Lance Mackey. We've got multiple Iditarod champions. So it's an extremely competitive race.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be a great weekend. When do you expect them back in?
We do have a bit of a shortened trail. We're expecting something like 260, 270 miles for this race. And typically it's Sunday morning. It could be very early Sunday morning when they come back to Bethel.
Well, have a great weekend covering this exciting event. Ben Matheson at KYUK, thanks for the update today.
Thank you, Dave. And you can check out kyuk.org. We'll have coverage all weekend.
And as that race gets underway, another Alaskan adventure came to an end this week. Lonnie Dupree became the first person to scale Denali on a solo attempt in the month of January. KTNA's Philip Manning has been following along and joins us. Philip, I saw Lonnie on TV last night, so I suppose it's safe to assume he has now made it off the mountain and in one piece.
Yes, they were able to pick him up yesterday. They weren't sure they were going to be able to because the forecast wasn't great, but they did get a big enough window, and the pilot tells me it was actually really smooth once he got up to base camp yesterday.
Well, I guess that's all good to hear, and he looked back happy last night on some of the TV channels. Who is this guy, Lonnie Dupree? I mean, he's a name now a lot of people are familiar with because it's been year after year for him, but who is he exactly?
Well, Lonnie Dupree, he's done a number of expeditions in the Arctic and in various mountain ranges over the last 25 years or so. He's actually climbed Denali before, just not under these circumstances. So he's pretty well acquainted with cold weather environments.
As you've been talking to some of the veteran folks around Denali, some of these veteran climbers and pilots and everybody, is this expedition that he's been on a pretty big deal as far as history of exploring that mountain goes?
Well, he did take a very well-known route, but the trick is he's the first to do it by himself in January. And the veteran climbers that I talked to say that what's significant about doing it in January is how short the days are. You know, someone going even just a few weeks later in the year is going to have a couple of more hours of light every day to work with. And so that I think is the most significant thing as far as, you know, an achievement compared to doing it at any other time of the year, basically.
And did he have anything to say so far about what made the difference for him this year as opposed to his previous attempts?
The thing that's turned him back in the past has always been the weather turning on him. And he got pinned down for a few days at one point, but I think overall he had better weather than the previous attempts, and it was just as simple as that.
Well, it was certainly fun to follow along. Philip Manning reports for KTNA and Talkeetna. Philip, thanks so much for the update.
No problem.
To Alaska, I go north, the rush is on. North to Alaska, I go north, the rush is on. George turned to Sam with his gold in his hand. Said, Sam, you're looking at a lonely, lonely man. I'd trade all the gold that's buried in this land for one small band of gold to place on sweet little Jimmy's hand. Cause a man needs a woman to love him all the time.
Remember, Sam, a true love is so hard to find. I'd build for my Jenny a honeymoon home below that old white mountain, just a little southeast of Nome, where the river is winding, big nuggets they're finding. North to Alaska, I go north, the rush is on. North to Alaska, I go north, the rush is on.
Way up north, way up north, way up
Thanks for listening to Bristol Band Beyond on KDLG. Well, the rush is on to southeast Alaska as the legislature gets into session next Tuesday. Newly elected lawmakers and the new government seating his new administration. Currently, as we speak, Bryce Edgman is District 37's re-elected representative. The new old district covers all of Bristol Bay and down the Aleutian chain and includes up to Galena to round off the population. Edgman stopped by KDLG this week for a preview of the session. What's the atmosphere in Juneau going into this session? I've heard some doom and gloom on one side. Is there any optimism of good things? What's at the forefront of your mind heading down?
Well, I think most people know that we're now in an era of very pronounced budget deficits. When I left Juneau in April, we were looking at a deficit of something like $1.4 billion oil being priced at $105 a barrel. Well, as 2015 rolls around and the start of session is just a few days away, we're now looking at possibly even a $5 billion shortfall at today's spending levels. So the mood in Juneau is going to be one of great concern and of trying to balance the short-term needs of keeping sustainable basic services in place, all the while keeping an eye on the long-term future of state government and the ability to make some $12 or $13 billion in liquid savings accounts that we have today to make that last well in the future as we transition into some other form of economy outside of oil, or hopefully in the meantime that oil rebounds and that we get natural gas online and we have the opportunity to help contribute to agency services in Alaska, which really have grown exponentially in the last 10 years or so, you know, in a state that's far-flung, that's high cost, that is very remote, and, you know, I think many would argue a state that even today continues to underserve its residents in terms of essential public services.
Up to a $5 billion deficit. Have we been here before?
It's not unique. But the elements today, I would argue, versus back in the 80s and even in the 90s and early 2000s, when the price of oil at one point was $8 or $9 a barrel and what have you, I would say that the dynamics today in 2015 are different.
Because?
Because our budgets are a lot larger. The state population has increased. We're looking at years and years of inflation-adjusted spending. We're looking at healthcare costs that are some 65 or 70% higher than the nation at large. And we're looking at a lot of services and programs that are now in place that weren't in place years ago. And not to get too doom and gloom about things, but we're also looking at a future where the North Slope and its world-class oil fields may have gotten to a point where they're on a perpetual decline, and we just don't have a replacement for oil revenues, which has historically provided up to 90% of all state revenues in the state.
We'll talk more about that with you in the future, I'm sure. But let me ask, as you're heading down next week, yourself and all the other lawmakers, we tend to think you head down there and try to get as big a piece of pie back for us as you can. Do you change your calculation heading down now? Do your fellow lawmakers change? Is everybody looking to tighten a belt together, or is everybody grabbing whatever crumb they can get back home?
I've been counseling every community leader that I've been in contact with to lower expectations, to focus on public health, life safety type of capital budget items, and to submit all the requests as they normally would, but with the understanding that what we're going to get funded, at least for this upcoming session, is going to be really a fraction of what we're able to fund just a short 2 or 3 years ago.
What's the most contentious thing you think will come up in this next session?
Well, it has to be the budget, of course, because that is going to be the overriding issue that will just sort of loom over everything we do down there. But I think there'll be other policy issues that are going to be very contentious. I think we, of course, have a new governor with a new administration, new commissioners, and with that comes a new philosophy on the recently passed Senate Bill 21 that was ratified by the voters this past August.
New governor, Bill Walker. What are your thoughts on the agenda you see so far, his budget priorities, his politics? Can you work with Mr. Walker and his team?
Oh, absolutely. I thought we worked well with the previous governor, Governor Parnell, although we did have some serious policy differences with the Parnell administration and with the incoming Walker Mulott team. I think for us rural legislators, and myself in particular, I will be more aligned with the approach that the new administration will be bringing in terms of a moderate approach to solving problems. And one, I think, that will be more amenable to looking at the challenges in rural Alaska at an up front and close level.
You're a Democrat. He seemed to curry favor with a lot of Democrat voters, maybe because the party or the ticket was unified. But he seems to have pretty conservative philosophies, both socially and fiscally. What's your sense from the Democrats? Are they ready to work with Bill Walker, or is there some voter disappointment?
Well, you know, I think Bill Walker will bring to the table the philosophy that let's do what's right for Alaska first. And in that regard, he is going to curry support with both Democrats and Republicans and a lot of moderate voters in the state.
Bryce, so we hope for good things for the session. Thanks, as always, for stopping by to talk to KDLG.
Well, thank you, Dave. I think it's really been a pleasure. And I would remind everyone that please pick up the phone, send an email. I'm more than willing and make myself available to talk to anybody at any time that I can. So we really appreciate that two-way communication.
Finally, on this week's show, we are pleased to have Drs. Dan O'Connell and Kathy Heineman with us. Kathy, not for the first time, but Dan O'Connell making a debut appearance here. Many of our listeners may know one or both of these veterans of the Kanakanak Hospital, and Dr. O'Connell is probably no stranger to Dillingham drivers who have seen him walking 5 miles to and from work season to season, year to year. Today, we'll look for their expert opinion on how we can all be a little healthier in 2015. As Dr. Heineman says, we don't have to do a complete lifestyle overhaul to make some good progress.
Every little thing makes a difference. I just recently was reading in a book titled The Willpower Instinct by Kelly McGonigal that one of the biggest things that a person can do to be healthy is to be consistent about the choices that they make. For instance, for me, right now, I said, I want to walk more. I want to walk more in 2015. I'd like to think that I was going to walk home every day from work, and I don't do that because it's too dark. But I like to walk some every night. So maybe it'll be 2 miles, maybe it'll be 4 miles home from town. But I'm trying to walk some every day.
Now, our town resident walking expert is also with us today. Tell me about your daily walk, Dan.
One day a week I walk from home to the hospital, which is 5 miles. The other, how many days is that? The other 6 days, I walk 2 miles a day.
Do you mind if I ask how old you are?
I'm 78.
What's the coldest you remember walking into work?
Here it'd be like 30 below, but I lived above the Arctic Circle for a couple of years. And I was out walking when it was about 100 degrees chill factor, minus 100 chill factor. So you can walk when it's pretty cold.
I think you've encouraged many of us to stop trying to find excuses for reasons to be outside walking. Why do you do that every day, or so often?
Well, I used to say that I lived with the best cook in Bristol Bay, and we were good friends with the second best cook in Bristol Bay, so I had to walk to stay thin. But since I've gotten older, I walk for health. I have to second what Dr. Heineman just said about walking. I was just at a meeting down at the University of Washington, and I tell people they covered everything from dandruff down to ingrown toenails, and the cure for everything was to walk. And they say if walking were a prescription, it would be the most recommended, or should be the most recommended prescription that we would dispense.
Interesting. Now, this may seem pretty rudimentary, but you have to have probably some tips for people walking. I think if anybody decided they were going to go out and walk 5 miles tomorrow, maybe not anybody, but a lot of us would scratch our heads and say, geez, what shoes should I wear? Should I have a light? Is there a trail I'll be safe on? What are some tips for somebody that may just start walking?
You need a good pair of grippers. That's the way you start. A good pair of shoes, and most people would know what those are, running shoes if it's 30 above, and those are real heavy rubber boots if it's 30 below. You need wind gear. Cover your ears up. I frostbit my ear several times. Good pair of hand gloves. Most of it's common sense. And starting low, go slow.
Start low, go slow. That's a good way to start the year.
Dan actually gave me the best tip that I ever had for winter running, which was to get the cheap hex head metal screws, the quarter inch long ones, and just screw them right into an old pair of running shoes.
That's about a $1.50 fix to make a good pair of grippy running or walking shoes.
Correct. The only thing that I found out is don't stick them underneath the ball of your foot because
eventually
they'll poke you.
Right. Let's talk about some other general health. And, Doc, if you could pretend that I'm just one of your patients and I want to set some goals for myself this year to be a little healthier, talk me through it.
I would ask if you smoke. If you do, stop.
Period?
Period, yeah. Nicotine is one of the most addicting substances on Earth, and it's very difficult, but you need to stop smoking, you need to stop chewing. You need to stay in motion. If you drive a snowgo, you wear a helmet. The same thing in a car, you wear a seatbelt. If you're overweight, you lose weight. Diets are worthless. There's only one diet that's of any value, in my opinion, and that's the Mediterranean diet, because it includes salmon, olive oil, whole grains, fruits, nuts, and if you drink wine, all the better. Glass of red wine in the evening. Enough rest. Kathy, take it from there.
Do something to take care of your stress. Exercise is certainly one of the better ways to take care of stress, but other things can also take care of stress, like yoga, talking with good friends, going to church for some folks.
Okay. All of these things you've mentioned, I'm not following any of them, or I'm doing the ones you've told me to quit. What do I do now?
You get up an hour earlier in the morning, and you go to bed an hour earlier, and you start a stretching regime, planks, Pilates, rubber bands, yoga.
Maybe broad terms, what are some other health issues that either one of you see common that people can make lifestyle choices on here in Bristol Bay?
Dan mentioned drinking wine, but he's talking about one glass of wine. I see alcohol as one of the biggest problems. And overuse of alcohol and the use of drugs for non-medicinal purposes, for recreational purposes, are two of the major things that I see as damaging the health of the individual and of their family, and especially of their children.
Doctor?
I have little to add to that. When I talk to patients, I become like a broken record. And, drink lots of water, eat healthy and walk, and don't smoke and walk, and don't drink too much and walk, and,
Put on those walking shoes, huh?
Yes.
Dr. Hyman, Dr. O'Connell, thank you both so much for coming by.
You're welcome.
It's a pleasure.
Raindrops are falling on my head, and just like the guy.
That's it for this week's Bristol Bay and Beyond, KDLG's weekly news magazine. Send us your feedback, story ideas, poems, songs, and essays to news@kdlg.org or to me at dave@kdlg.org. You'll find this week's show later today at our website. Thanks for joining us. Have a safe and fun weekend. Go for that walk, and we'll see you back here next week.
I didn't like the way he got things done, sleeping on the job. Those raindrops are falling. Soon be turning red. Crying's not for me, 'cause I'm never gonna stop the rain by complaining, because I'm free. Nothing's worrying me. It won't till happiness steps up to greet me. Raindrops keep falling on my head, but that doesn't mean my eyes will soon be turning red. Crying's not for me, 'cause I'm never gonna stop the rain by complaining, because I'm free. Nothing's worth